And so again, went from the Christian worldview to modernism and deism, no miracles, then to naturalism, the atheistic worldview. Secular humanist, God is dead, now man can save the planet. The Marxist, God is dead, and everything's controlled by economic factors, and we're going to save the planet through Marxist communism. Of course, that led to hundreds of millions of human beings being slaughtered. So we'll talk about Marxist communism, and then if we get a chance, we'll move on to consistent naturalism, consistent atheism, which is nihilism. No meaning, no truth, no morality. And but Marxist communism, Karl Marx and Friedrich Engels wrote the Communist Manifesto in 1848. They believed the bourgeoisie, the capitalist business owners were evil. The proletariat, the working class, they're the good guys. They believe profit was evil, so that whoever signs your paycheck, that's the enemy. I don't know about you, but I like the guy who signs my paycheck, okay? I'm not the kind of guy who wants to go out and start his own business. But Marxist philosophy, it's a combination of three things, well, four things, really. One is the Hegelian dialectic. Hegel, it's kind of an oversimplification of his thought, but Hegel argued that Hegel was an idealist, okay? And Karl Marx is a materialist. So Hegel, idealist, he believed that really the physical realm isn't real. All that's really real is the world of ideas. Okay? Now Marx is a materialist, or what we're calling today a naturalist. Only matter exists. Okay? But Marx did embrace Hegel's idea of the thesis, and then the antithesis, you know, the antithesis, and then synthesis. And so Hegel was actually denying absolute truth existing. Hegel's arguing, absolute truth is unfolding. And so history, as history unfolds, it's absolute truth. In fact, and I even think that in the end you end up with the deification of the state. But whatever the case, so you have an idea. And so Marx, even though he's a materialist, took the Hegelian dialectic, this debate between one idea and another idea, and then it gets synthesized to prove, to produce new truth. Okay? So Marx could say like something like capitalism is the thesis, and then socialism, you set up a socialistic state, is the antithesis, but then that will be synthesized by communism, the classless society. Now, you know, Marx dealt with feudalism and other ideas that predated capitalism too, but it's the idea that something can be true for today, and then others will argue against that, and then they get synthesized. You can see that it's really an artificial way to look at the history of ideas, but there's some truth to it. It's an overgeneralization. For instance, some Greek philosophers said only being exists. Okay, like Parmenides. Only being exists. Others said no, only becoming exists, you know? Only being, only sameness exists. Others say no, only change exists, okay? And then eventually they get synthesized of you, like Socrates, Plato, and Aristotle, both being and becoming exist. Okay? So there's a kind of a synthesizing when being only, becoming only. No, being is being and becoming. Okay? So this is an artificial kind of way to, it kind of forces itself on everything. But Marx accepted the dialectic from Hegel, the Hegelian dialectic, but it was dialectical materialism. Reality is becoming, not being. So when you get back to the ancient Greeks, being or becoming, Hegel and Marx side with becoming. Everything, reality is change. So even truth is a changing, evolving thing. Okay? And reality is becoming, not being. Everything is relative. Nothing is absolute. And so the view, Hegel's dialectic, his view of history was the unfolding of the historical process through an idea, the thesis. It gets opposed, the antithesis, and then new truth is synthesized. And then that new truth now becomes the thesis. And then there'll be an antithesis. And it just keeps being synthesized. So the Hegelian dialectic. But Marx took the dialectic, and he wasn't an idealist like Hegel, and he took from Feuerbach, Ludwig Feuerbach, the atheist, his materialism. So he believed in atheistic materialism. Marx believed that man created God. God didn't create man. And he believed that human rights were government-given, not God-given. But then Marx added to that his view of economic determinism, that through class struggle and revolution, we see history unfolding itself in an economic way. You had like primitive communism, and then eventually the antithesis was slavery, which then led to feudalism, which then was synthesized into capitalism, which will be synthesized into socialism. Socialism is the dictatorship of the proletariat. It's when the working class revolts against the bourgeoisie, the capitalists, the business owners, and then you have the dictatorship of the working class. Well, the fact of the matter, in the old Soviet Union, the working class is almost everybody. It's too many guys to be dictators. So they have to have representatives. Well, what better representatives than the revolutionaries, the cold-blooded revolutionaries who just won the revolution? And so you get the most bloodthirsty individuals, the Lenins and the Stalins, become your new dictators. How's that going to work for you? But eventually it's supposed to unfold into communism, the utopian classless society. Now when you read Marx and Engels, the Communist Manifesto, they want the entire overthrow of every government on the planet Earth and every economic system on the planet Earth, so that all nations are socialist, have a dictatorship of the proletariat, and then they're going to merge in a global society, and we're going to own everything in common. It's going to be a classless society. Yeah, well, the dictators never do give up their power. And so he's got the dialectic, Hegel's dialectic, Feuerbach's materialism, economic determinism. And so really history is just a story of economic dealings on planet Earth. And then he also adds to it Darwinian evolution and the survival of the fittest. He believed religion was just the opium of the people, or the drug, the narcotic that keeps the masses drugged. So it's like, well, I'm not going to revolt against my evil business owner because I want to be a nice little laborer, because I want to go to heaven someday. And so, you know, Karl Marx is just saying, imagine there's no heaven. You know, he's basically, the John Lennon song is basically a promotion of communism. imagine there's no heaven, there's no hell, believe us, need us. All we have is just this world, and the world can come together and be as one. No, no, it doesn't work. And with religion supposedly the opium of the people, he believed private property must be abolished. People in Bainbridge Island that drive around in BMWs should not be socialists. They should not be Marxists. Okay? By the way, communism and socialism are synonymous. Because the communists are really socialists promising to someday in the future, long after they're dead, to merge with all other socialist countries and have a classless society. But, you know, the Soviet Union was the USSR. The Union of Soviet Socialist Republic, yeah. So it's not, you know, the idea that socialism and communism are two different things. By the way, communism is socialism, and people disagree about how to get a socialistic state. Some would be Fabian socialists. You elect. We're a lot like Fabian socialists. John Dewey was a Fabian socialist. I had more to say about how our kids were going to be educated, and his views worked. There's a guy, Lou Rockwell, he's a libertarian, and he was interviewing a far-left radical woman's lib. Was it Naomi Wolf or something like that? I forget what her name was, but she's far-left, and I listened to the interview and just heard this libertarian converting a liberal. You know, she was talking about how the education system in America in the 20th century has been one of the biggest failures in history. And Lou Rockwell said, no, it's one of the greatest successes in American history. And she said, the SAT scores are down. You got more unwed mothers in high school. You got fatherless homes. You got kids dropping out of schools. You've got a literacy rate is on the rise. And Lou Rockwell said, yeah, that's what I'm saying. It's been one of the most successful programs in American history. And she said, what are you saying? He said, public school system has been taken over by people who don't want to educate. They just want to indoctrinate people in political correctness so they can enslave the masses. And then you just hear real silence on, about 20 seconds of silence, and she said, you know, I've been talking to Ron Paul's people lately, and they're making more and more sense. And then Lou Rockwell said, yeah, Ron Paul's a good man. And then she said, well, I've got some questions for you. And the whole interview switched. He was supposed to be interviewing her. She kept asking questions. If that's the case about education, if that's true, then what about this? And he basically was unfolding the whole liberal, progressive, Marxist, socialist agenda and showing that it was never intended to work. It was intended to enslave. And but private property must be abolished. The family must be abolished. Just read the Communist Manifesto. It's not that long. It's a dry read. It's probably about 3 or 4 times as long as Humanist Manifestos 1 and 2, but it's a pretty dry read. But private property must be abolished, family must be abolished. So, you know, like Plato, the state's supposed to raise the kids. So the state must raise and educate the children. A graduated income tax, so the more money you make, the higher percentage you pay. So, you know, you get a bunch of Americans that pay no tax, then you get Americans, poor Americans that are paying maybe 5 to 10% tax, then you get Some that are paying 15 to 20%. Then you get people paying 45%. Then you get people paying 60% of their income in taxes. Okay? So when President Trump comes up with a plan that cuts everybody's taxes by a small percentage, what's the socialist argument? The people, the highest wage earners, are saving, getting the most money back now. Yeah, but they're still paying a higher percentage than anybody else, but they're getting to keep more of their money, which then they're investing, which then creates jobs. That's why unemployment is reaching historic lows now. But with a graduated income tax like that, you're taking from the rich and giving to the poor, but what you're really doing, you're taking from the producers and giving to the non-producers, which then encourages everybody to be non-productive. Okay? By the way, you can take all the money from the top 10% of Americans and then equally divide it among the rest of America, and then we'd all be poor. It's just the level of being poor. We might be making an extra $1,000 a year, but it doesn't solve it. The key to prosperity is productivity. Okay? You prosper by producing something. Okay? The key to prosperity is not taking from the rich and giving to the poor. It just doesn't work. But it's just like our public school system has dumbed us down so much that if you just have one party that says, we want to take from the rich and give to poor people. We love poor people, so we want to give them food stamps and welfare and stuff like that. And the other side says, no, that's stealing. You can't take from the... It makes it sound like, this group of guys is so evil. They hate the poor. And in reality, we're trying to save them from the cycle of poverty that the welfare state has produced. There's a lot of ladies that won't marry the father of their children, because then they'll lose their food stamps and their welfare. And if it's in the inner city, and a good chance the guy grew up in a home without a father because of the cycle of poverty that welfare has created, there's a good chance he doesn't have wasn't taught the discipline to get a legal job. And how is that helping anybody? But whatever the case, graduated income tax, also, the government control of the means of production, and then eventually it leads to the dictatorship of the proletariat, dictatorship of the working class. Well, that's too many workers, so it's got to be the professional revolutionaries that rule. And then eventually you get a one-world government, and then it's going to evolve into a one-world classless society. Well, there was a guy named Gramsci, an Italian, and he wanted Marx's goals to be achieved, but he said, look, Marxist communism doesn't work because religion is too powerful in Europe. You got away with it in Russia, you'll get away with it in China and North Korea, you're not going to get away with it in Europe because this religion that even Gramsci believed was opium, it's too powerful, too strong. So instead of obtaining communism through revolution, you attain communism through evolution, okay? You evolve into communism. Infiltrate and use religion. That's what's called liberation theology. The present pope is a liberation theologian. So it's basically, in some way, shape, or form, he believes Jesus was the greatest Marxist revolutionary who ever lived. He came to earth to liberate the poor from their evil capitalist business owners. And what did Larry Elder, he's a black conservative, he said that his dad always taught him that no poor man ever gave me a job. So what he taught Larry Elder when he was young was, don't badmouth rich people. Somebody gives you jobs, you're going to be a rich person. Poor people don't make jobs, they don't create jobs. But infiltrate and use religion, take it over. The Sandinistas, they had their own creed, where Fidel Castro and Sandino and Marx were like the new members of the Trinity. But gain control, infiltrate. gain control of the churches. I think that's the reason why, I think the number one reason why there's pedophile priests, to be honest with you, in Roman Catholicism, is not because these are true Roman Catholics who are going against everything Roman Catholicism taught. I think that there's been an infiltration of Catholicism by serious homosexual activists who want to take over Roman Catholicism. And I mean, if you're a homosexual activist and you study hard and you get ordained to the priesthood, you get access to other priests, you get access to little boys. And so before we Protestants, you know, slam Catholicism for pedophile priests, I think we need to understand that there is a vicious, satanic, demonic, Marxist attack and infiltration of Roman Catholic churches as well as Protestant churches. Now, I think you're asking for trouble by having an unmarried priesthood, but whatever the case, I can't get into all the data, but there have been traditional Roman Catholics who dropped out, who studied for the priesthood and dropped out of the seminary, Roman Catholic seminaries, because they found out they were being recruited by some of the professors into the gay lifestyle. Mm-hmm. And, you know, tell them, well, we need to get to learn about other cultures and stuff like that. So they would take a van out to the gay section of the city. And, you know, so one guy, an Italian guy, wrote a book about it and stuff like that. But he's still a traditional Roman Catholic, but he's fighting the gay invasion of Catholicism. But with Ramsey, you're saying that, take control, infiltrate the churches, the education, the media, the arts, and then slowly take it over from within. That's the way you're going to get global communism, not through revolution. Revolution will only work where the poor people really have it bad. Okay? By the way, socialism is its own, and again, communism and socialism are, for all practical purposes, synonyms. And socialism is its own self-fulfilling prophecy. You say, oh, capitalism is bad. At first you have to lie. Oh, capitalism's so bad. By the way, crony capitalism is evil. But crony capitalism is not true capitalism. Crony capitalism is when Microsoft gets so powerful, they hire lobbyists to convince congressmen and senators to pass legislation that makes it impossible for Microsoft's competitors to stay in business. And so crony capitalism creates monopolies. Socialism, though, is the worst possible monopoly, where the state is the only monopoly, the only game in town. And but socialism, the more, you know, okay, capitalism isn't perfect, and you start seeing some of these business, the Rockefellers come to power, they start changing the rules. You can even show the Bush family, the Walkers, the Prescotts, the Bushes. I mean, they've got ancestors that came over on a Mayflower. And yeah, they sacrificed for a couple generations, but then they pretty much owned everything. And then what do? They change the rules and make it harder for others to join the good old boys club. When the Rockefellers, they had to buy, Rockefeller had to buy his way into the good old boys club. Congress was having hearings about Bill Gates and Microsoft because he was new money. He couldn't break into the good old boys club. So then what he's do, he started giving donations to Roman Catholic charities, millions of dollars. I told my wife, I said, he's an idiot. He thinks by giving money to Roman Catholic charities, which are really going to feed the poor, that's going to get him in the good old boys club? And so they just kept investigating him and have hearings and had to testify because they were claiming he had a monopoly and they were going to break it up. And then it was reported he gave a multi-million dollar donation to the United Nations. And I said, oh, okay, he found out what you got to do. And then they just fizzled the whole Microsoft's not a monopoly, I guess. And but whatever the case, so capitalism's got its issues, but socialism is the worst that capitalism could possibly get. So the socialism, they just add a little bit of socialism here. You know, welfare, food stamps, social security. Then eventually it creates more and more problems, and then they say, look how bad capitalism is. Well, it's not really capitalism anymore. It's like half capitalism, half socialism. So then you say, well, look, medical is so expensive. Let's socialize medicine, and you get Obamacare. And you socialize a whole big segment of the economy. You socialize medicine. What else is it that the government pretty much took over all of it? And you take over these different segments, and then you say, look how bad capitalism is. Look, we haven't been a capitalist society since, before 1913? And the federal income tax and Social Security. So, it's like taking pure water. This isn't really pure water, it's tap water from there, and take pure water and just say, well, it's poison. That stuff's poisonous. That'll kill you. And we got the remedy. It's socialism. Pour a little bit of socialism in there. But in reality, we got the poison. So it wasn't perfect water. I got it from the sink over there. But it wasn't that bad. But now we're going to clean it with some chlorine. We're going to clean it with some fluoride. And we're going to clean it with this and clean it with that. And eventually, you know, it's like, wow, this water is horrible. Okay, but don't worry. We're the guys who made it real horrible. We got the solution. So, you know, the same liberal politicians who wanted the violent criminals to be set free from prison and walk the streets to commit more violent crimes, they're the same guys who say, hey, we're here to save the day. We have the solution. No, excuse me, you guys caused the problem. Now you say you have the solution? What's the solution? We got more gun control. We got to disarm the law-abiding citizens. Who are the only guys that are going to turn in their firearms, assuming that they'll turn them in? And with Connecticut, they had to register. They passed the legislation a few years back, and they had 100,000 people that refused to register. And so then they were going to have their police. They were thinking of having their police go door to door, you know, until they found out a significant percentage of the 100,000 that refused to register their firearms were the police. And so they kind of had to back off. It's like, wow, if our thugs are not really thugs, they're freedom-loving Americans, we might have to wait on this. But that's what socialism does. You just gain more and more control of education, the churches, the media, healthcare. The list goes on and on. Taking care of poverty through socialism? No, it just creates more poverty. Now some people will argue that the early church was communistic. Acts 2 verses 41 to 45, because they shared everything. They had everything in common. They shared what they had with others. If they owned property, extra property, they sold their extra land and then took the money and gave it to the poor. That's compassionate capitalism. That's sharing. You know, I once talked to, when I was doing law enforcement, subbase police, I talked to a lady who thought communism was the best form of government. I said, why do you think that? She said, because I sum up communism in one word, sharing. And I said, that's nice, but Karl Marx summed it up in one phrase, the abolition of private property. Hmm? See, sharing, you got to own something to share it, okay? And if you're going to take something, if you own something, I take it from you. Even if I'm the government, I don't have a right to take it, I just take it from you. That's breaking a commandment, thou shalt not steal. Okay? There could be no, if God wanted communism, there wouldn't be a command, thou shalt not steal, because it'd be a sin to own stuff. Okay? So sharing is not the abolition of private property. Sharing is compassionate capitalism. So God instituted human government to protect men, their God-given rights and the property. God did not institute human government to enslave mankind. Okay? So those were the really negative form. What I'm going to do now is read to you from... Did I read Nietzsche's Madman parable yet to you in this class?
I think parts of it, but never the whole thing.
Okay. I don't want to read the whole thing, but I'm just going to give you an overview of it. It's in his work, The Gay Science, which was, he died in 1900, so gay meant something different, just like the happy science. And in his Madman parable, he has a madman, and it's actually Nietzsche himself as the madman, which is interesting because he died mad. He died insane. But he talks about a madman who lit a lantern in the bright morning hours. Well, if it's bright out, you don't need a lantern. So later on, he finds out that he came too early, that Nietzsche was a man ahead of his time. His colleagues weren't ready for his message. But he went into the marketplace, and he cried out, "I see God, I see God." And the guys that were around there, they were atheists. They didn't believe in God. So when he was saying, I see God," they started laughing at him. They started saying, "Why did he get lost? Did he emigrate to another country? Has he gone on a voyage?" And they laughed at him. So the madman just jumped into their faces and stared at them. And he said, "Whither is God?" he cried. "I shall tell you. We have killed him, you and I. All of us are his murderers." Okay, what he's talking about is he's telling his atheist colleagues. The church is like virtually irrelevant for as far as Nietzsche is concerned. He's talking to his atheist colleagues, and he's saying, "Look, you guys are real happy, okay? We're the guys who killed him. We're the guys who figured out, and Nietzsche thought that science, scientific advances had disproven God, okay? We're the guys who figured out that Christianity is a myth. We're the guys who figured out that Christianity is no longer a viable option for Westerners. And so then he says, so all of us are his murderers. How have we done this? How were we able to drink up the sea? Who gave us the sponge to wipe away the entire horizon? What did we do when we unchained this earth from its sun? Is there any up or down left? Are we not straying as through an infinite nothing?" Okay? And he's saying, basically, there's no up or down anymore. Everything changes. It's like the atheists threw God off the bridge, but before they threw him off the bridge, they reached through his pockets. They said, "Oh, absolute truth, we got to have that. Oh, absolute morality, we need that. Oh, value to human life, we got to have that. Oh, meaning in life, we got to have that. Okay, now let's throw God off the bridge." He's saying, why are you guys so positive? You say God is dead, let's party. I say God is dead, I'm freaking out. Okay? We don't even know what's true or false anymore. We don't even know what's right or wrong. We don't even know up from down anymore. See, they thought, throw God off the bridge, God is dead. Now business as usual. He's saying, no, if God is dead, everything changes. Okay? Jordan Peterson, the Canadian psychologist who's not a Christian, he believes Christian, the Bible is a book filled with mythology, but he's very Nietzschean in his thought. He respects Nietzsche. So he understands the dangers of the death of God. So even though he's agnostic, he thinks Richard Dawkins and the late Christopher Hitchens and Sam Harris and Daniel Dennett, the new atheists, he thinks they're a bunch of idiots. It's like, you want to get rid of Christianity? He's saying that the Bible, the Judeo-Christian heritage, the Judeo-Christian worldview, that's what gave us the concept of liberty and individual rights and human rights. Before you throw that in the garbage can, Christianity in the garbage can, I want to know what your alternative plan is. Okay? I'm just not sure that your alternative is going to be any better than the gulags and the concentration camps. Okay? And he says, "Do we not hear anything yet of the noise of the grave diggers who are burying God? Do we not smell anything yet of God's decomposition? God's to decompose. God is dead, God remains dead, and we have killed him. How shall we, the murderers of all murderers, comfort ourselves? You know what he's saying here? He's saying, we killed God, you guys killed God, and you're still acting like God's still alive. Okay? Don't you smell his corpse decomposing? Okay? Then he even talks about, we've got to invent our own feast days. Must not we ourselves become gods simply to be worthy of it? To seem worthy of it? And in other words, we got to get something. He says, look, we've proven Christianity is a myth. But it's a myth that we based our lives, it gave meaning to our lives. Now we've dethroned God. We've disproven Christianity, he thinks. Now God is dead. What is going to fill the void? Okay? And he's saying, you know, stop living with Christian morality and Christian truth. We're going to have to invent our own truth. He called for supermen with the power, through their will to power, not through reason, because Nietzsche said truth is metaphor, with the courage to create their own hard values rather than the soft values of Christianity, which Nietzsche believed held back human progress and human evolution. But then he realized he came too early. My time has not yet come. This deed is still more distant from them than the most distant stars, and yet they have done it themselves. So he's basically saying, atheists who are real positive, the Richard Dawkins, this is why, you know, some guys call him a dinosaur, philosophically speaking. Guys that are still on the positive side of atheism don't even realize the consequences of a world without God. If they did, they'd be in the nihilist camp. Okay? Then he goes into the church and he says, what are these churches now if they are not the tombs and sepulchres of God? And so what Nietzsche is basically saying is that you know, he's predicting the churches in Europe, the great churches of Europe, are going to become museums. Not really places to worship a dead God. Okay? So nihilism is more a feeling than a philosophy. It's pessimistic atheism. Only matter exists. Naturalism then leads to nihilism. Everything is either controlled or arbitrary. There's no miracles, no free will, only natural causes. Therefore, man is not free. His genetic makeup and his environment control him. Man is a machine, no soul or self. So Nietzsche's saying, look, if God is dead, truth is dead, morality is dead, and meaning is dead, but maybe this will bring about the Superman. No, if God is dead, and truth is dead, and morality is dead, and meaning is dead, man is dead too. We already talked about B.F. Skinner and his views. Jacques Monod argued that random chance causes all change. Man can never be sure he knows anything. Man can never be sure anything is real. Ought becomes is. There's no absolute moral law. It's saying murder is wrong, or you ought not to murder. If murders happen, murder is. There's no, everything is meaningless. There's no genuine meaning to life. Life is totally absurd. Well, this is not livable. We have to live like life has meaning or we kill ourselves. It's not thinkable. We have to even think in terms of truth and falsehood. So nihilism leads to the death of truth, morality, meaning, art, and it also leads to the death of man. C.S. Lewis and Francis Schaeffer talked about that. So all we need to do here is just to introduce what we'll be talking about next week, and that's existentialism and then how it gave way to postmodernism. But you can't really stay in nihilism. I mean, when you're a nihilist, nihilistic philosophers say, well, the only question that philosophy needs to answer is why not suicide? Why even go on living? Yet that philosopher will then live to write another book pick up another paycheck. So it's not really livable. And so the response to this pessimistic, negative, but consistent consequence of atheism is to say, well, if man desperately needs meaning in life, then we ought to just create it, not through our reason. We've given up on reason, but through an act of the will. That's what Jean-Paul Sartre and Baron Bloom, existentialists, come into play. So we'll talk about that.